Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts.
Beep beep, I'm like, whoa now. Feet up at your house. Tree top blowing my pounds. Nikes, I got dope feet. Crack rocks like a dope fiend. I got bitches in Florida. B-Lab, he got water. Purple peach smoking Georgia.
Ryan Hemsworth is a noted musician and producer who originally hails from Halifax, Nova Scotia. Renowned for his early forays in cloud rap and for being a gifted and prolific producer, Hemsworth released his critically acclaimed album Alone for the first time in 2014. His excellent and latest album is called Elsewhere. It's out now via Last Gang Records and his own Secret Songs imprint, and features vocal and lyrical contributions from an array of artists from around the world. Ryan and I caught up again just ahead of a Halloween show he was playing in Toronto in 2018, and we discussed his approach to production and collaborating with others, his earliest memories of becoming interested in music while he grew up in Halifax, some of the influences on his own approach to playing music and coming up with beats and tracks for himself and others, what's up next for him, and much, much more. With the support of listeners like you who subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly pledges at patreon.com/creativecontrol, plus in-kind support from CFRU 93.3 FM, Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, this is the 440th episode of Creative Control, featuring the talented and wise Ryan Hemsworth, with your host, me, Vish Khanna.
Beep, beep, I'm like, whoa now. Feet up at your house. Tree top blowing my pounds. Nikes, I got dope feet. Crack rocks like a dope fiend. I got bitches in Florida. B-Lab, he got water. Purple peach smoking Georgia. Independent girls don't matter if they're white, blue, or red. Bad bitch with a forehead. Oh my God, give me more. Beep, beep.
up, I'm like, whoa now. Feet up at your whole house. Tree top blowing more pounds.
Hey Ryan, how's it going?
Very good.
Nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
Do you remember the last time you were on the show?
It was after the bad thing?
No,
that's
it,
when I last saw you.
We did like a Halifax pop roundtable.
Yes.
Do you remember this?
Oh, yes, I do now.
There weren't that many people there.
Yeah.
But sure. That's where we met, and it was for some reason we were paired up with... Actually, why were we paired up with Bad, Bad, Not Good? Do you remember?
I think just... Well, we have the same manager, so I'm sure he tried to just, you know...
get everything going at the same time. But you have like an affinity for those people?
Oh, of course, yeah.
They're your buds?
Yeah, they're like the sweetest guys ever.
Right. Yeah, they seem like nice guys.
For sure.
I think. They were on the show again to go through their last album. We went by song.
Yeah.
And it was kind of intense. Has anyone gone song by song with one of your records?
No, not like through the entirety or anything. I've talked about like random songs that, I mean, usually in interviews, they're just like, oh, this song, which is like the single I just put out, and they definitely haven't heard the rest of the project.
So they don't go through the whole record with you?
No.
Well, to be honest, I kind of stopped doing it. It was too much work.
I'm sure.
Well, just to edit it all in, because I would edit in pieces of the music.
And especially now, it's like, you know, people want to put out 30-track albums.
Yes.
You don't want to do a five-hour
podcast. How many tracks are on your album is not short?
12.
12? Yeah. That's like a reasonable amount.
I think so. I mean, I made like countless songs in the last 2 years, and so I wanted to make it a lot longer, but then I realized, like, I don't think people have the attention span quite as much now, so just trimming out the fat is
That seems to be a theme that's come up. Now, you've called the record Elsewhere, and I've been talking to lots of people about various kinds of escapism. Does that resonate with you when you think of Elsewhere? First of all, it's not about the show Saint Elsewhere, is it? Do you remember that
show?
No,
it's not, but that definitely did come to mind after I thought of it.
What does the concept of Elsewhere mean to you? Like this notion of being somewhere else, to be literal about it.
In a way, yeah. I mean, I think all my titles are always like, there's a few different meanings and in a cheesy way. But I think mainly a lot of it was made on the road and with different types of people from different genres and different worlds. So I kind of realized like in the, like the last year is like, I need to make the thing that only I can make. And I think that's what, you know, any creative person needs to approach, their craft with. But just realizing that, I was like, okay, then that means like, it's not really a Nova Scotian album or a Canadian or whatever.
Yeah.
I was just like, in my mind, it wasn't really a place. It was just more like a, I don't know, little 45-minute mood that goes all over the place. And so in a way, it's just like I couldn't really target like where it could really be like super popular or whatever. I think just it like hopefully it brings together like a lot of weird different like internet kids that like it all across the world.
I see.
Like I was. You know.
So it's not necessarily speaking to your desire to be elsewhere, or is it designed to take, because, you know, I think a few people have picked up on the fact, and you listen to the record, you mentioned it incorporates people from different places and backgrounds. It has a worldly aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
So this notion of creating like a travelogue, an audio sonic travelogue, did that appeal to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is an element of that too. Like, I don't know. I think when I travel a lot as well, people don't even like know where I live or like where I'm from. And I say like, oh, I'm in Toronto. And they're like, oh, really? I thought you were in like LA or this or that. I don't know why that is. So I realize like maybe I'm not even like that obviously grounded anywhere. So
do you think that's the plight of the producer who doesn't necessarily get to speak for themselves as much as the artist that they, the features on their tracks?
Yeah, probably.
Like people assume your perspective is the artist's perspective?
Yeah.
Or I mean the vocalist perspective?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I think I've always, I mean, my albums have always been kind of like this, like a lot of different voices and, you know, my voice is the production, I guess.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, with their words, I don't influence too much. You know, I pick people because I like them and I like what they're saying and how they're saying it. So
yeah,
at the moment, it feels like it's right for my story, you know.
There's a line on one of the songs, and forgive me because it's escaping me at the moment. As you can see, I have no notes. I'm trying to rely on my brain.
I like it.
Someone mentions something about a woman's forehead and then says something a little more risque after that. And I just wondered, just about a sexual act
right.
that might rhyme with forehead. And I yeah. couldn't help but think, what is it about this person's forehead that is so alluring? Why would it a forehead? I've never thought of a woman's forehead as being something you would desire with such, you know, and then expect something else from the... Oh, because you can kind of see the forehead. Oh, my God. Anyway, have you thought about what people are saying on your songs? Have they given you pause?
Sometimes, you know, like when I'm there and it's being recorded... It's easy to miss stuff for sure. I definitely didn't like ghostwrite that line or
no,
anything.
No, I didn't think you would have, but it just, as I was listening to it, I'm like, forehead? Why is that such a turn on? You know, that's what I thought. So I wondered, like, do you have, when people are speaking, it's a weird thing you do. You're yeah. a producer. Mm-hmm. These people are kind of speaking on your behalf.
Yeah.
When you collect all these voices for your records.
Yeah, and I'm fully aware that that can be polarizing or mm-hmm. alienating in a way, because, like, there's definitely people that, if they like my music, they actually just specifically like the sad, slow songs and maybe not the yeah. ones with Atlanta rappers talking about foreheads. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I get that, but I've just sort of embraced it at this point. It was definitely what scared me in the beginning, because people were like, oh, but you do this and then you do this, it's confusing. But
yeah,
I was like, oh, is that a reason to like not do all the different things I want to do, or just embrace it and weird out some people?
Well, you must accept that that's your role, that because yeah. do you have much lyrical input when someone's coming up with stuff?
Not really. I mean, once in a while, like, I've randomly written like the melodies or mm-hmm. With it depends, you know, like if it's like with a rapper, I'm not really getting in there.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, that's like, you know, this is your craft, and there's certain people that are like looking for feedback and I'll give it.
Like,
but
do you give anyone a hook, like a chorus or anything, and then they kind of craft a rap, the verses around it or something?
Not for like the rap songs,
no,
or anything.
Okay.
Like, but for example, like the last track on it, Animal, featuring Robin from Bernice, we made that pretty much all like in my home studio. She wrote it all, but like there was definitely like little moments where she was humming and I'm like, oh, it'd be cool to do this or that, or
right,
you know, that's like a comfortable amount of feedback. And you know, I do my thing and they do theirs, and I yeah. try to respect that.
You trust that.
But if something jumps out, you always should just say it, I've learned.
Right.
Because sometimes it's a good idea.
So are there moments on Elsewhere where someone said something lyrically, vocally, or suggested something to you about the production that kind of caught you off guard or took you by surprise, or you thought...
There's like a couple tracks that I wanted on it, but they were definitely too risque in that way.
Oh.
Indifferent. Yeah. messaging and yeah, basically
a lot of foreheads.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I have to, like you're saying, I do have to kind of consider the voice and the message that's coming out through
yeah.
the people that are actually talking and singing and rapping on my project. So even yeah, there's some stuff where I just like, oh, maybe it'll like leak later on or something.
Sure.
And
yeah, a bonus song,
let that live on its own.
So it's been 4 years since your last record? Is that right? Full length?
2015.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Or end of 2014.
Yeah, I thought it was 2014. Yeah. But all I was going to get at is these pieces on your end of things have been gestating since around that time or before
yeah.
that time?
Yeah, I've been working, you know, constantly since I finished the last one.
Right. So I'm just curious, when you put the record together and you have all these sort of disparate people coming up with lyrical concepts, I sometimes feel like when we don't even realize it, when we make a batch of stuff, it's of a time. It's of a time mm-hmm. for us.
Mm-hmm.
Might be of a time for the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Do you notice any threads that have emerged on Elsewhere? Or did you kind of produce the record so that it had a kind of thematic through line?
I think so. I mean, in the process of just the past few years working on it, it was really like wanting to almost create way too much, like all different types of stuff that I could possibly while on the road and meeting new people. Mm-hmm. And then finding like that thread between everything. And so I think that's why, I don't know, in the end it ended up having like a song like Animal at the end and a song like Special Girl, which is like an Afropop track. Again, kind of realizing like this is what makes me the most excited, and like when I listen to a mix or something and it jumps all over the place, like that's what I love, like the kind of almost disparate but like somehow threaded together.
The mix of one song or the mix of an album? Like
a radio mix.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. So when you hear sort of dynamic stuff going on a record, that excites you.
Yeah, I like changes and jumping around and sometimes like almost clustered structure and stuff, and I don't know where that comes from, but it's definitely a listening experience that I kind of enjoy.
So in that same vein, when you listen to this record, do you hear where you were at? Do you hear where you were coming from? Like beyond the lyrics, do you have a sense of where your headspace was at and maybe what this music might say about it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, interesting to think of from that perspective.
Well, it's an interesting project for me to talk about with someone, because I don't have too many people who are really behind the scenes on some level, but also like this is their work. But other people, like I've already said, other people are kind of speaking for them. So I'm just curious, like on a musical level, like some of this stuff is going back 3-4 years. It still works, it's still timely, so that's a testament to you and maybe your vision. But yeah, I just wonder if you think now like, oh, huh, I was in kind of a zone there where I was really focused on this kind of feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can really hear the different, I could probably like map it out almost. I think that would probably be the most interesting way.
Sure.
Like literally with like beep beep, and definitely like beep beep was from like an Atlanta session like 2 summers ago, and I spent like a month or two there and made like over 100 different rap songs, and some went on some people's mixtapes and stuff. Yeah. But I kind of held on to a couple from that, and then One of One featuring Rex Liferaj and Pilo, that was made like in the Bay Area at a different time, like kind of earlier in the year. So it's like there's like so many different times and places. And Special Girl, I like partly produced in Tokyo when I was there, and then finished it in London with SK, who's on the track. So yeah, it is weird to kind of actually sit back and
As listeners, I think we sometimes look for those cultural markers that you're kind of describing, maybe geographic or cultural. But I'm curious for you, like, does this stuff do you hear the travel? Do you hear the being away when you listen to those songs?
Yeah.
Because it put you in that mindset of like, oh yeah, I was there.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting to me because from my perspective, like the last project, it was definitely sadder because I was sadder, you know, and traveling and feeling a little lonely, like at the peak of like constant traveling and touring. And then with this one, I think I was a bit more patient, forcing myself to be more social, and also like being in studios with people a lot more. Like I'm pretty influenced by other people's energy.
Yeah.
And I kind of just adapt to what's happening in a room, I think. So I think that kind of rubs off on the whole project.
What does that say about you, that you adapt to the other people's energy? Like that's something that to me, it kind of evokes like that you have some empathy, that you have a sensitive aspect to, like, you're sensitive to what's going on around you. What does that say to you about you as a musician, though? Like, you get to Atlanta expecting, and you know you're going to work with whoever you're going to work with, and you're probably expecting a certain thing. Does that change because of the vibe in the room?
Yeah, I think it has to.
Yeah.
I think, I think what you're describing is, like, not to toot my own horn, but, like, a producer, like, ideal producer.
Yeah.
Like, you need to adapt in a way. You can't walk into a room with 20 beats and just say record and walk away. Like, I've had sessions where that's how people wanted to work, but you don't get amazing songs out of that, really.
You mean they expected you to just give them the beats and walk out of the room while they came up with something?
Yeah, I've had like not like leave, but
yeah.
But like here's a beat. Okay, I'm gonna record, and in that way, you know, that's one person's way of like knocking out five songs in an hour or something, which is fun, and maybe once in a while you do like kind of strike gold. But
is that like a cultural aspect of what you do? Like there are this whole thing is fascinating, and I imagine some people don't really know exactly how it works, that mm-hmm. a producer might say, hey, I'd like you to jump on a track on my record. Here's five beats. Like, what do you do in that case? Or do you say, I have this in mind for you? Like, I know it's probably a case by case scenario.
Yeah. I think that's what people don't realize. Like my album is a different case, 'cause it's my plan. I'm approaching people first.
Yeah.
Whereas like producers didn't used to do that really. It was like, you're a Timbaland, like, oh, you've got the fire tracks right now. I'm going to go to your studio and do that. But now it's like, it's totally different in every case. And I think that was the fun with this project. Like Atlanta, I would go in and like one person would just want to post up for like 3 hours and make as many songs as possible. And a lot of the time it's like not even with like an objective, like, oh, these are going to be on my project. It's just like, make songs. And
where does that impulse come from though? Like that's fascinating to me. And when you were talking, I was thinking there's this very famous scene of Jay-Z and Timbaland in a studio.
Yeah.
And Jay-Z's just, or rather Timbaland's just playing him beats and sort of gauging the reaction.
Yeah.
And when Jay-Z can't handle a beat, you can see it in his face.
For
and
sure.
And then he's contemplating what he's going to say over it. Does that happen to you? Like, mm-hmm. are you like, here's what I have?
Yeah, sometimes that's the way it is. I mean, and that's why I had fun, especially because this project, that was only like one part of the process. Whereas like, I worked with Daniela on the track Lagoons, and she's, you know, a real songwriter, producer, like wants to like pick at stuff and change
things. Which Daniela, by the way?
Daniela Andrade.
Right.
Yeah.
Just for people listening.
So, yeah. And so everyone like really works differently, and especially outside of each genre. So
that's fascinating too, because you might have a singer who's a producer, or you work with other producers, and then that must be interesting energy in its own right.
Well, I think like I've never been like a cocky producer or like my idea is the only way.
Yeah.
But I've especially learned that like in the past couple of years, like you really have to just be in the moment, because one person might just want your full track and record on it and that's it.
Yeah.
And that can work. Another person wants to pick it apart for a week or 2 weeks, and then that also can work great. So it's just this constant like just being there, being present, being open-minded.
Yeah, I mean that seems like key. It's weird, that seems like key aspects of being a musician and collaborating with someone. Seems like a good advice for being a human being.
I think so.
It's just being open to whatever.
Yeah, I'm hoping like this making music and making projects is like just training me to be a better person.
It sounds
like that's what you hope.
Does do that. I mean, just this notion of you reading a room, reading an emotional, you know, gauge.
Yeah.
That's key.
Yeah, definitely. And like socially, I think it's helped me a ton. Like when I was growing up and going through school and everything, I was like so quiet and awkward, and I'm definitely still those things, but I think just hopefully a little less, and I know how to maneuver a little better.
So we alluded to the fact that people don't know where you live. Some people don't know where you're from. The last time you were on the show, we were in Halifax for the Pop Explosion. As I recall, you were from there.
Yep.
Yeah, and upbringing was good.
Yep.
We covered this ground before, I believe, but you say you were a shy kid.
Yeah.
Do you know why? Why were you a shy kid? I always wonder when someone describes themselves as shy. I wonder if that's a home life thing, if that's a social thing at school. Do you have a sense of what it was?
I mean, I wasn't like a scared kid or anything, just more like I preferred to listen and just hang around.
Preferred to listen. That's interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
Showy.
No.
You were a modest kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think my mom said I didn't really like cause much of a fuss or cry too much.
So. Does your demeanor reflect your family in some way, or your mother?
I have two older brothers, and I mean, I think they definitely like wreaked havoc on my mom and everything growing up, and they're definitely way, you know, more energetic and crazy than me. So maybe that was a factor, just like to be around. And I'm like, they're like 7 and 9 years older than me. So I was definitely the baby. So I think that those things all definitely like affect you.
You must get asked about the more famous, the famous Hemsworth brothers. Yeah. And whether you, are you connected in any way?
No, no connection.
No connection.
But I was at a show the other day and the girl was like, are you Chris Hemsworth? I was like, so do you think Chris Hemsworth is like DJing here, or do you think my name is?
Yeah, it's just got confused.
Yeah.
Right.
But I was like, yeah, sure.
But now you have, now you mentioned you have older brothers.
Yes.
It's just going to further confuse
even more.
Them. They must be those guys.
Yeah, I'm never escaping this.
So you come up in a Halifax, you're a
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Shy kid, what gets you into music exactly?
Probably my older cousin, Matt. He's quite older than me, but I definitely always like felt some kind of connection or like looked up to him. I think because my general family, like, it was, you know, sports and kind of different things than whatever appealed to me. I never wanted to really play sports. Yeah. Or like do that stuff. And so Matt was in like bands growing up. And
any bands we would know?
I don't think so. It was, you know, like Nova Scotia, and like he was in like an indie rock band and folk band and stuff like that. And
as I think I talked to you about the last time, Halifax music means a lot to me, or meant a lot to me when I was growing up. And mm-hmm. I got some years on you, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. So there's a chance I might have, you never know if I might have seen one of your, just because whenever
I'm
they
sure
were,
it's,
I,
there
was
it's
just something
enough.
About that region just really exploded in particularly in the 90s.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
So was he part of that scene, so to speak, or was it more modest?
Not as much. I mean, he, maybe you do know him. He runs a company called Pigeon Row.
Yeah.
Matt Charlton.
Oh, that's...
That's my cousin.
That's your, Matt Charlton's yeah. your cousin.
See, yeah, small world.
Yeah, I know Matt very well. Yeah, we work yeah. together sometimes on, you know, he sends me people and I say, yeah, I'll talk to that person.
For sure,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
He's definitely worn a lot of different hats in that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, he definitely put me on the right path early on. So.
What kind of stuff did he get you into?
Oh, I mean, he gave me, like... Smashing Pumpkins albums and yeah. Soundgarden and like Beastie Boys and stuff like that, you know, just at like when I was second or third grade, I feel. So like starting nice and early with that stuff.
I would think for a layperson, the Beastie Boys make sense in terms of where you went on some level. Mm-hmm. Maybe the other two, not as much.
Yeah.
Are you?
I mean, I think they're there in my, yeah. the melodies and everything. I think, people that like talk to me after shows, sometimes they're just like, oh, like I can hear like Postal Service or like different stuff in yeah. your sounds. And like, that's cool. Like, I don't know how that wasn't an intention, but maybe just listening to those chord structures and listening to Bright Eyes and stuff in high school, in junior high. Like, I think it definitely, it's such an impressionable age
yeah.
that I don't know, you naturally go back to that.
I mean, is it fair to assume you are primarily immersed in sort of synthesized music these days, electronic music?
Like listening?
No, I mean, as a producer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when I'm producing, I I try to find a good middle ground between my keyboard and all those electronic sounds, yeah, and still incorporating samples from whatever soundtracks or stuff I did listen to in junior high.
So do you play guitar or anything?
Yeah.
You do. Okay. Mm. So does that, then that makes it through as well.
A little, like, I think there's glimpses. It's probably hard to even pinpoint, but
it's just a fascinating realm for some of us. Like the notion of a person who just creates music. I assume you create everything yourself, but you're also in a sample based realm. So mm-hmm. I wonder where you're coming from with all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also just like having fun for myself. Like a lot of the stuff I put into tracks, like, is more just, I don't know. I love, like, for example, like playing shows and like throwing in like a random sounds from like Pokemon or from like stuff I liked in high school, and more just because I can imagine myself like 10 years ago, like,
yeah,
they don't even realize they're dancing to this or whatever. It's like, it's just fun for me and no one really gets it, but
yeah,
I think that's important to stay sane, maybe.
What do you remember when you made that sort of realization that, you know, Matt gets you into certain bands, artists, you start playing music, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when you got into the realm, closer to the realm that you're in now, where you were starting to create sort of soundscape stuff? And
I mean, specifically in junior high, like, I was like, rap music is not good.
You thought that?
Yeah. Like, I was, because I started really playing guitar in like grade 6, grade 7.
Okay.
Like every day.
So what year is that roughly? Just curious.
Probably 2002 or 3.
Right. So just after that kind of weird White Stripes,
yeah,
Strokes, making guitars kind of cool
around
again.
That time, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So I find that stuff significant. Just like what's going on in the culture at the time, mm-hmm, and how that might, like, for someone to say, rap music's not good. Because also at that time, the horrible sort of rap rock stuff was just kind of still there. Like the kind of,
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, like any era, there's highlights, but I,
yeah,
don't think that was the greatest time ever,
no,
maybe, for rap. So I think it kind of worked out that way.
Yeah.
And then I, for whatever reason, just like reached high school, like grade 10.
Because you studied hard and you passed
I made
your studies.
It. Yeah.
Well, you say for some reason. I mean, clearly you must have done something right to get into high school. Not,
yeah.
They don't just let anyone into high school. You had to have done some work. Sorry, go ahead.
And, you know, that was like Lil Wayne mixtape,
yeah,
era. Like that was like the drought is over at 3, like whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, like Lil Wayne was probably like my entry, my gateway into that.
Back into
and
it.
Then it was like going through all of like Gucci Mane and Max B, and then like mixtape era was like super my thing, because I was realizing like this is such a better output and way of sharing music than like what I'm listening to now, which is all studio albums, and I got to go and save $20 to go and buy this or whatever.
What's the distinction then for people? Is it because it's free?
Yeah, totally.
That's what it was?
And, okay. And that, so like, you know, I was also just like a nerd, like going home on the internet, sitting on the computer all day, every day. So I think it was just like the combination of being super fascinated with free music and like, this is like legal free,
yeah,
mixtape shit versus what I was used to up until that point.
So then you just, what did you do to get yourself into that world as a musician?
I mean, I started, I found like a group called Main Attractions from the Bay Area, and they were like the originators of cloud rap, if you want to call it that. And
what is cloud rap exactly? How would you characterize cloud rap?
Really low quality samples pitched down really, yeah, low or pitched way up. And it's like making quick music at the mercy of quality and mixing and everything.
Right.
You know? So it's like really...
Have you been characterized as cloud rap?
I think initially because,
yeah,
I was producing,
yeah,
some for,
yeah,
these guys.
Okay.
And also it's entirely sample based.
Right.
You know, it was like literally, you know, like Little B's, like I'm God, like these songs were kind of the staples of,
yeah,
that time, which was all like Imogen Heap samples and specifically stuff from like the Indian like rock world. So I think that's especially, I was like,
okay,
whoa, this is exactly what I like,
yeah,
combined.
Right.
So I think that was really what made me realize like, okay, I can exist. I can find my own little
that's cool
pocket.
Yeah. And now your profile is very high. I mean, it's fair to say, like, when we spoke, whatever it was, 4 years ago, things were really exploding for you, and they still seem to be, like, at a very, very high level. Do you objectively have a sense of what happened? Like, what's going on? Why is your stuff really, risen to this level?
I don't know. I think I just, like, especially between like 2012 and 2014, I was just trying to like be nonstop. I was like putting out projects, remixes, touring constantly. I think I was definitely like, I found that groove in a way, which I think is just the norm now. Like everyone needs to go,
yeah,
you know, harder than they possibly can and probably burn out
that much quicker. Yeah. Yeah. Why are they doing this to us? What is that our fault? Whose fault is that we're burning ourselves out?
I think it's probably on both sides, you know, like I think there's definitely a hunger, and it's almost like this capitalist hunger is just to like put out as much and make as much money and everything. But it is kind of it's a weird time for sure, especially yeah. after like, cause I was doing that so long and then I didn't really put out like a project until like this year.
Right.
So a lot of it was just sort of trying to smell the roses and
yeah, just make your stuff, but take care of yourself a little bit.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you were feeling lonely, and on, with your previous record, and now you're feeling more social. So you're in a good place.
I would say so.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a better understanding of me and my age and where I am in the world, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I've always wanted to, you know, manage expectations. I think it's like super important for a creative person in this age, yeah, because you're not going to always be the shit.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like you can't just be the shit or like the worst. Like you can be like down for a minute and come back up. And I think a lot of people don't fully grasp that ride. They just think they need to be at the top at all times.
Yeah, there's a recurring sentiment that's come up with people I've spoken to about how we just have been too hard on ourselves, particularly creative people, and that's got to stop because our expectations are way too high, and yeah, we end up hating ourselves.
Yep.
And then you burn out, mm-hmm, like you say. So, and this is why I was getting it elsewhere, being wondering anyway if it was some escape route, this notion of being somewhere else outside of your...
I think I'm always a little bit somewhere else in my head, maybe.
That comes across.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I think that's probably pretty obvious, but yeah, I don't know. I just
like a fantastical place, or just like, is it looking at yourself almost like sometimes?
Yeah, probably more self-aware than like, yeah, somewhere paradise in
right.
my head.
Okay.
It's kind of, so a lot of that for me is just also like trying to shut that voice up.
Yeah.
Sometimes if it's too loud.
Well, I mean, you're doing fantastic work and the record's wonderful. What's sort of next for you? Do you have a plan?
I mean, I think with this one, it's been squeezing so many different things and sounds and directions into one thing, so I kind of actually want to properly divide that up a bit more. So I definitely have like another EP that I'm planning right now, but I want to do like a few different side projects, like one that's a lot more guitar driven and like instrumental.
Yeah.
And I've been working a ton with like a lot of different artists in Japan right now, so I would love to just like spend a proper amount of time out there, and just like, for me, it's like connecting the dots. And that's what I do like with my label and stuff. Like it's focusing on stuff outside of North America.
Yeah. You started a label how long ago? A couple years ago?
Yeah. Like 2014.
Oh, a few years ago now.
Yeah.
And the label is called
Secret Songs.
Secret Songs.
Yeah.
What did you just allude to why you did that? Like why start a label?
Yeah. I mean, I was finding a lot of stuff and a lot of people, I like have like a lot of pen pals and stuff, you know, like musicians and stuff. So, for me, it was just like, okay, you have all these amazing unreleased songs and you don't know what to do with them. So I kind of know I'll help. Like, And so it's just been kind of growing from that and learning through that process, seeing the other side of the music world.
Is it all digital releases or?
I just put out Rhyme Playgrounds most recent and just last month, and that's going to be vinyl.
Okay.
That'll be like the first proper.
No, I just wondered if in this strange time, if you find it worthwhile to do that as a label person.
I think there's still value. Like, yeah. I still buy vinyl. I think it.
Well, I do
to,
too.
To some people, it's more valuable than ever because it's the only physical aspect anymore.
Yeah.
But I think also a lot of people are just like, it makes no sense at all. So.
Right. Yeah. I just wondered if you had a perspective on that yourself. Mm. So, okay. So you have a plan for a record and you're touring quite a bit.
Yeah. Right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's that going?
Good so far. Yeah. It's, I did just 4 nights in a row until yesterday. And then I've got like, one here tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then, it continues till December. It's good. It's a co-headline tour with my buddy Giraffage, and we came up around the same time, similar music. So it's kind of just like touring with your best bud.
That's nice. And so you have a multitude of voices on your songs.
Mm-hmm.
How do you reflect that in a live show? I've seen you once and you did a fine job. You did a fine job reflecting them.
I try.
But I'm just curious. what do you do?
I mean, the tours kind of differ, I guess, sometimes. Like, when I'm in a certain city, it kind of depends. Like, if I'm in LA, I can bring out a bunch of those singers and do it live.
Yeah.
If I'm in, like, Kentucky, I can't really do that. So I'm still DJing generally, and I'm playing a lot of my music, and I'm also remixing a lot of my own music, trying to just keep it fresh for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, there's still... I always kind of forget, like, people are like buying tickets to like hear my songs.
Right. And
sometimes that's weird because I like it's not club music as much sometimes, and I don't know. As you can tell, I'm constantly deliberating.
No, it's fine. I think it's good to be self-aware and thoughtful about these things. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not. I've always worried, like, oh, what am I going to be on like cruise control at a certain point? But I'm still just like kind of freaking out. Like,
it's good.
I think that's
it means you're not going to be complacent.
I think so.
Yeah.
Motivated through fear.
That's fear of being complacent, I think.
Yeah.
Fear of letting people down, which is again, I think that's, again, don't be too hard on yourself, but I think that's a good attribute.
Mm.
If people wanted to learn more about you on their phones and computers and newspapers, where would you send them? What kind of information is out there about you?
Probably just my Twitter, which is @RyanHemsworth.
Okay.
That's usually where if I have any stupid thoughts or if I'm sharing new music, that's probably the closest
Twitter
thing to my brain.
Okay. And the record is out on a label?
Yeah, it's on Last Gang.
Okay.
Through Secret Songs Last Gang.
Right.
And it's out now, so you can listen to it.
It's great. It's really wonderful.
On the interwebs.
Yeah. People should check it out. Is there a song from elsewhere that I can play for people right now listening?
Sure. You can play The Butterfly Effect if you wish to.
I can.
It's featuring Ombre Perkins.
Okay.
She's a young R&B singer.
Why did you pick this song?
I think it's... I don't know. It's just on my mind. I think it's a good vibe, and maybe it's a good entryway if people don't know my stuff.
I didn't mean to cut you off, too. You were saying, where is she from?
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like young girl. Like I brought her up to Montreal to sing at my release party.
Okay.
Which was really sweet to hang out. But actually that one was really fun because I brought her, Daniela, and Robin from Bernice here. And it was like different worlds, but like it's so cool to see like kind of this thing that I created in real life.
Connected by you.
And they like, they got off really well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, well, yeah, let's play The Butterfly Effect. Let's do
Sweet.
That. This is from the album Elsewhere by Ryan Hemsworth. Ryan, thank you so much for being back on my show and for making time for me. It means a lot.
Anytime. Thanks. Thank you.
working for the day, and we going up, yeah, like the top of the week, yeah, drop top, got wings. I've been through so much, got me mind. And it all falls down, I feel the same. When it's working for the day, and we going up, yeah, like the top of the week, yeah, drop top, got wings. I've been through so much, got me Monday. When it all falls down, I feel the same.
Thanks again to Ryan Hemsworth, not only for appearing on this, the 440th episode of Creative Control, but for enduring what I think, if you've listened to the show lately, recent episodes, you might have heard me allude to the fact that I seem to be suffering from this chest cold or something. Well, I can verify now, I have pneumonia. As I'm speaking to you, I have bronchopneumonia, or pneumonia, as it's more popularly known, and you may have heard me coughing a little bit while I was speaking to Ryan. I hope, for the love of humanity, that I did not make Ryan sick or anyone else sick with this pneumonia. I didn't expect it. I apologize. I thought it was a cough. I was trying to tough it out. I thought it was just a bad cough, but got the pneumonia. As I'm speaking to you, I'm on antibiotics. I should be okay. You don't need to hear about this, but you do probably want to hear about the fact that that was the 440th episode of Creative Control, which I mentioned. Thank you, Ryan, for being on it. This show is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available on all iOS and Android platforms, and also on things like Spotify, YouTube, and Audio Boom as well. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for on any of those platforms, or if you want to learn more about me, sign up for my regularly scheduled newsletter, please visit my site, vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at vishcreative or at vishkana. You can listen to a radio show version of Creative Control on Wednesdays at noon Eastern Standard Time around the world at cfru.ca or on an actual radio and 93.3 FM if you're in or near Guelph. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly pledge to keep this podcast going. You can change it up, you can do whatever you like, whatever amount you feel is worthwhile and affordable to you. If you ever want to change it, you can. It's flexible, it's a monthly donation, it means a lot. patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support of this show. Thanks, as always, to my friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use one of his songs to end the show each week. It's called The Rest Is Yet to Come. It's the instrumental version. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, and as usual, thanks to you so much for listening to my show and telling your friends to listen to it and subscribing to the podcast on whatever platform you use. It means a lot. Well, I should go rest. I have pneumonia after all. I will talk to you very soon, hopefully. Bye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.